Back from down under, it's Luke Jensen. Luke, appreciate you joining us for a few minutes. Just give us a quick update on the Davis Cup, something that is a different kind of tennis, a lot more exciting for those people that have been fans and sat in the stands. Tell us about what the U.S. team is going to do and its chances. It always seems to fall short in the Davis Cup.
Yeah, you know, Patrick McEnroe hasn't won. He's been to a final. He's been to a semi. He was in the semis last year. It's the tennis version of really the Olympics, where, you know, nation versus nation. It gets very emotional, gets very loud, very similar to a college atmosphere, but you're wearing your country's uniform. You're wearing their flag on your sleeve, and you're representing more than just yourself. Patrick McEnroe has maybe the most talented team right now in the world. He's got Roddick, who's I think four in the world right now. He's got James Blake, I think he's five in the world right now. And the number one doubles team in the world in the Bryan brothers. So he's got the talent. They just need to get over that hump, prepare a little sounder. They play the Czech Republic. And if you want to see the future of this game, the next, you know, Roger Federer, this guy Tomas Berdych, this 19-year-old whiz kid from the Czech Republic, who can kind of do it all. 6'4", runs a really fast around the court, very tough mentally. And so we're up against a good, talented Czech team. But if you check OLN this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you're going to see some good matches.
Well, listen, give us your prediction, and maybe we can check in with you on Friday and get a little bit more about Tomas Berdych and the U.S. team. But what's your prediction? What are our chances, given that the U.S. has not had the kind of focus where the players come together for long enough to develop that camaraderie and that focus?
Well, the training hasn't been there, but we do have individually the players and the pieces to do it. First off, we finally have a doubles team for the United States side in the Bryant brothers that can dominate. The Czech team knows going into this tie, they're basically down one love. The Bryant brothers, I think, are 8-1 in Davis Cup play. They're outstanding in this format. They've played at Stanford, won a national title, both as a team, individual, and a doubles national championship. They understand the concept. So we go in there one love. Now it comes down to how well Roddick's going to play and how well James Blake's going to play. If you look at the talent, we should beat the younger Berdych and the rest of that team. But Davis Cup is very emotional, and it's in the Czech Republic.
It's in Ostrava. Well, let's check in with you in a few days, my friend. Appreciate it. You're the best.
Hey,
you are the man.
My friend. You keep going for it.
Laces out, buddy. Luke Jensen. Well, now we're going to shift to a very, very serious subject, something that is a dose of reality, and one of the more thoughtful people that has been covering this. First, a few weeks ago, the tragedy, our friend Seth Joyner is going to join us because it cuts home very deeply with him, with Andre Waters. And we're joined by Alan Schwartz. That's Schwartz without the T. I've learned that myself. Alan, thanks for joining us.
That's my pleasure.
Alan, first let's start with the Andre Waters story and how you began to look into this more deeply. It's very troubling that a man at his age would have the brain tissue, and most of it seems to be linked to a history of multiple concussions, the brain tissue of an 85-year-old.
Yeah, well, for folks who don't know, Andre Waters was a very hard-hitting defensive player. I think he was a strong safety, if I remember correctly, for the Philadelphia Eagles during most of your career, Nick, you know, mid to late 80s and early 90s. And anyway, he committed suicide back in November, which is, of course, a terrible, terrible thing, and people really didn't know why. And, well, a fellow in Boston who was a former Harvard football player and later, of all things, a professional wrestler, well, he retired from his career due to concussions, and he became an expert in concussions, and he suspected in the research that he had done on Andre Waters and his concussion history that concussions might have impaired his thought process and exacerbated any depression that he might have felt and that afflicts everybody. Well, to make a long story short, he had pieces of Andre Waters' brain sent to Pittsburgh to a neuropathologist who discovered that, in fact, Andre Waters' brain had deteriorated to the point of it resembling an 85-year-old man with Alzheimer's. Now, is it possible that that's, you know, an exaggeration? Of course. But nonetheless, it was discovered that he had significant brain damage due to concussions that he had sustained on the football field, and research has shown that that type of damage caused by concussions can cause and or exacerbate depression to the point where someone might take his own life.
We're joined by Seth Joyner, who played with Andre Waters. Seth, this is a very personal thing for you, isn't it?
Oh, of course it is, Nick. No doubt. I mean, the guy was a good friend of mine, great teammate of mine. And, you know, it was really a sad situation.
When you hear that it can be this serious, Seth, how many other players that you knew during your career had to go to practice and go into a game not having fully recovered from a concussion?
Well, I think, you know, the way that trainers and teams handle situations now are quite a bit different than, you know, back when we played. You know, when guys get injured now, you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, training staffs are looking to figure out a way, you know, to get the guy well. They really don't push many players back. It's just, you know, back when I played, they wanted you on the field. You know, if you were an integral part of what was going on offensively, defensively, or special teams, and they understood they needed you to win, you know, most organizations didn't have a problem, you know, just putting a guy back out on the field, even if he wasn't 100%. There were many, many games where I played with injuries where I probably shouldn't even have been playing.
Did you ever play with a concussion, Seth?
No, fortunately, you know, if I ever had a concussion, you know, it wasn't that severe that it was an issue and I couldn't play or it bothered me. You know, I'm pretty sure I had one or two during my career and just really didn't realize, you know, what the heck was really going on. But I certainly have found quite a few guys, you know, you see guys, you know, have concussions and, you know, you look at them and you wonder, you know, well, what's the deal? You know, goodness, you just got a little hit on the head. You know, you've been sitting over there on the sideline for 2 weeks, but, you know, the more information, the more educated, you know, we've become about concussions, we understand now how severe, you know, they really are.
Alan, let's jump to the more recent article about Ted Johnson, the guy that led the Patriots defense to 3 Super Bowls. Certainly he was one of the key parts of that, and there seems to be a dispute over exactly what happened when he sustained a concussion and was encouraged over the advice of the team's trainer by Bill Belichick to go back into practice in the game.
Well, I got to tell you, there isn't a whole lot of dispute over it. I mean, I was expecting more than there has been. Ted Johnson, because of the story, and this sounds egotistical, but it's a fact, because of the story that I had written on Andre Waters in the New York Times, reached out to me and said that he wanted me to tell his story. His story is that in 2002, he sustained a concussion in a preseason game, and he contends that in practice 4 days later, when the trainer said that he should not be practicing in full contact, that Bill Belichick basically all but forced him to practice in full contact drills when he still was recovering from a concussion. Now, obviously, Ted Johnson was a grown man. He could have said no. But I think, Seth, you certainly can attest to the culture of NFL football where, you know, if you don't look hurt, you better get your butt out there. And if you say you have a concussion, you know, they're going to test you. And they're going to make sure that you know that, look, if there's any chance you can play, you better darn well play. Well, anyway, he sustained another concussion almost immediately. And as most people know or are learning today, if you sustain two concussions very close to each other, it can be incredibly damaging. And it damaged his brain to the point where he sustained a good half dozen more concussions over the next couple of years. And that has led to such damage neurologically in his brain that it's caused a significant depression, sleep disorders, attention disorders, just significant stuff to the point where his response to it, in part, was to become addicted to amphetamines and then also to antidepressants, which then, you know, put him on a roller coaster. He's been in a mental institution for 2 weeks, and he wanted to speak out, not to single out Bill Belichick, but to say that this is the culture of football, that there is ignorance about concussions, and that more coaches should be aware what the potential cost can be if you rush or inappropriately induce players back onto the field. And
Alan, we had discussion about this before, and most people said that I was very disturbed when the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Roethlisberger was put back in after his second concussion, the first one coming from that motorcycle accident. The idea was said repeatedly that the best medical advice and a higher level of expertise actually was available to the Pittsburgh coaching staff, and that's why they thought it was okay. That doesn't seem to be the case, does it?
Well, I don't want to comment on the Pittsburgh situation. I don't have any specific knowledge with that, and I haven't talked to the people involved. The NFL has started what it claims to be a very coordinated and methodical committee that over the past 10 to 12 years has learned a lot about concussions, about how to treat concussions specifically in NFL football. They contend that if the symptoms of the first concussion have subsided to X degree, that the player can go out and play and continue to play in the same game. The evidence of this is that they report themselves that roughly 50% of players who sustain a concussion return to the same game. I will also say that there are many other independent medical committees and communities that think that this is insane, that think this is dangerously reckless, and that it sets a terrible example for college and high school and other types of organizations. That being
said, talk about Dr. Robert Cantu as well, and what he said about the status of Ted Johnson's brain and cognitive impairment.
Well, he said that already Ted Johnson, at the age of 34, is exhibiting symptoms of mild Alzheimer's, and that those symptoms typically do not abate. I believe his word was relentlessly. They continue to the point where probably 10 or 15 years from now, when Ted Johnson is 45 or 50, he might have full-blown Alzheimer's.
Seth Joyner, let's ask you what this means to you. When you know the culture of football, when you yourself had to deal with several times when you were advised to go back and practice and actually play with injuries, how difficult is it to turn around a culture that is so given to, you know, performance, to playing with pain?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, people need to really, really understand, you know, the football is a game, first and foremost, but, you know, football is huge business, you know, when you really get down to it. And there's so many more things that come into play, you know, when you talk about it. You know, sometimes guys are battling for their jobs, they're battling for position, you know, they got a contract year. There's so many things that come into play. And the problem is that you got an older guy, or you got a guy that maybe hasn't been performing, you know, he might sustain, you know, a concussion, and the next thing you know, he's being pushed to get back out on the field. I don't think that culture will ever go anywhere because, you know, you just have to face it. This game is built upon motivation. You know, you either get the job done or we'll find someone else to get it done. And if you're not healthy enough to get it done, well, you know, you're yesterday's news. I think it's very difficult to change that way of thinking. Not only do the organizations and the coaching staff, for the most part, exercise that same type of thought, but the players know that it's that way, and they approach it that same way. But, you know, you get some players, you know, that are going to get a lot more leeway than other players just because, you know, their status and what the organization believes that they mean to their team.
Talking with Seth Joyner and Alan Schwartz from the New York Times, has written a series of articles, the most recent of which is Dark Days Following Hard-Hitting Career in the NFL. When we come back, Alan, let's talk about the believability of this so-called witness, Ted Johnson, how much he was held in respect, and if he says this, whether it was really the way it happened. I'm talking with Seth Joyner and Alan Schwartz on a very serious subject: collisions, depression, even Alzheimer's following NFL careers. You're listening to Head Games Radio on Sports Byline and Sirius Channel 122.